verses 23 through 25 we're going to look at today. We'll just read those verses again together. Verse 23 to 25, speaking of Elisha, we read, "He went up from thence unto Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city and mocked him, and said unto him, Go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. And he turned back and looked on them, and cursed them in the name of the Lord. And there came forth two she-bears out of the wood, and tore 42 children of them. And he went from thence to Mount Carmel, and from thence he returned to Samaria." Pastor Stephen Lawson from America, he told the story once of Hamilton Square Baptist Church in San Francisco. On the 19th of September 1993, the church gathered for a regular Sunday service, and they expected all to be normal. However, as they gathered, it was very apparent that that was going to be the most eventful service that that church would probably ever have. At that service, that evening service, there was a guest speaker named Lou Sheldon. This man had previously been an outspoken opponent of pro-homosexual legislation in California. And as he came, the church became a battleground. Two newspapers that had publicized this pretty normal guest speaker's visit were there. Militant sodomite activists showed up and threatened to disrupt the entire service. They gathered round the church. There was over 100 encircled round the church, and they denied worshippers access. And as the church service went on inside, they hounded obscenity after obscenity at the faithful worshippers. Well, coming to the end of these last few verses in 2 Kings chapter 2, you're met with perhaps a similar situation. For there you're met by Elisha, the man of God, and what is he? Well, very simply put, he is opposed for his faithfulness to the God of heaven. Chapter 2, verse 23, we read the little word "and." And what that does is that immediately connects the incidents here with what has just gone before. So what happened before? Well, you'll remember where we left Elisha. Last week we saw him coming to the banks of the Jordan, and he performed his second miracle. Jericho, as he came to Jericho, to that cursed city, he viewed the corruption of the waters, and it was a beautiful city outwardly. But of course it had that problem that it was bankrupt and barren, because within its waters were dirty, its waters were cursed. And so he came to these waters. He took a cruse or a simple jar, and in that jar, this new jar, there was salt. He placed salt therein, and then he poured salt from that jar, and there he cured and healed those cursed waters. Well, Elisha then left Jericho, and he came to the next city that he had been through with Elijah. Here he comes to Bethel. And here, as he enters this city of Bethel, he is vehemently attacked by 42 young men from that city. These young men attacked him, they abused him. And what did Elisha do? Well, in response, he turned, he glanced at these men, and then he cursed them in the name of the Lord. After that, he miraculously commanded two young she-bears to come out of the nearby wood and literally slay those young men. The irony of it is this. At Jericho, he removed the effects of a curse. But here, what does he do? He looks on those who are condemning him, and he now places upon them a curse. Now, this was really out of keeping with the character of Elisha. As we go through these studies, you're going to notice one thing about Elisha, that whilst he performs many miracles, he also prefigures Jesus Christ in his gentleness, in his meekness, in the way he conducts himself. Usually we find Elisha helping or healing or delivering. But here he shows the other side of his character, that whilst he was primarily an instrument of healing, he was also an instrument of judgment. And like the ministry of Elisha, The ministry of Christ is not one-sided, but rather it is two-sided. He is a savor of life to some, but a savor of death unto others. Oh, when you see Elisha here, and you compare him to all that has gone before, and even what we're going to look at in the coming weeks. Yes, you see the gentleness of him. You see his meekness. You see ultimately the gentleness, the meekness of Jesus Christ. But here in this incident, you also see the condemnatory nature of Jesus Christ. When you come to Jesus Christ and you receive forgiveness of sins, there you undergo the miracle of the new birth in your heart and life. You're changed. You are transformed. Like those cursed waters of Jericho, the effects of a curse, they are removed from you. But of course, this miracle, this third miracle, it is a warning to those who have never experienced the miracle of the new birth. When you reject Christ, when you spurn his offer of mercy, then what awaits you? Condemnation. When like these youths, these 42 young lads who were cursing the man of God, that if you continue to reject Christ and even to dispel him from your life, then there awaits condemnation for you as well. Oh, there is the compassionate, the gentle nature of Jesus Christ, but he is also one that condemns. He condemns those who curse his name. And so this morning we want to look at really this incident, how Elisha was attacked for his faith, and how then he responded to that. And we want to simply look at that under the heading, an attack upon Elisha. An attack upon Elisha. Notice firstly with me the timing of this attack. The timing of this attack. Verse 23 that we read, he went up from thence unto Bethel. And as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city, and mocked him and said unto him, go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. It has been a long time since we were with Elisha, on the day that he was called as a prophet, to the day that he was thrust forth as Elijah's successor. However, since Elisha had commenced his ministry there in the banks of the River Jordan, there as the mantle fell upon him and he took it up and he wore it. And as he became a prophet, Elisha really had experienced blessing after blessing after blessing. You remember how he came to Elijah. He asked him for the double portion of the Spirit of God. And the double portion was almost immediately, it was in effect in his life. He came to the waters of Jordan. He saw them parted, just as Elijah, his predecessor, had done. Then last week we saw that he came to the cursed waters of Jericho. And there he saw the entire face of a city transformed by simply adding salt to water. Now he has left Jericho. Now it has been blessing after blessing after blessing. And he's traveled a further 15 miles west to the city of Bethel. This would have been a very, very difficult journey. You see, Jericho was below sea level, but Bethel was 3,000 feet above sea level. Verse 23 speaks of him going up to Bethel, and that is no exaggeration. So here's Elisha, he's undergone blessing after blessing after blessing, and now he embarks on a 15-mile journey uphill to Bethel. And here he is. Now he's just at the end of that trip. And now it seems that just outside of Bethel, there was a forest there. And Elisha perhaps thought to himself, well, here might be a good place just to retire, just to rest for a little while. Elijah would have done that. Elisha would have viewed him do things like that from time to time, go into a secluded area, have a time of rest. So this was not unusual for Elisha to do something like that. But here's Elisha, and I want you to see, when does this attack come? When do these young lads, these young men, come and attack Elisha? Well, it is just at the point where he was physically exhausted from a spiritual high. He has enjoyed high after high, blessing after blessing. But now he's physically and probably emotionally exhausted. And just at this point, not when he leaves Jericho, but rather at the end of this long journey, just at this point, this precise moment, these Jews, inspired by Satan himself, they come and they attack Elisha. You see, often spiritual highs can be immediately followed by spiritual lows. We can go from the mountaintop to the valley of despair in an instant. Wonder if you've known a spiritual high in the past, this past week, this past month. You've known the blessing of God upon your life. Maybe you've known a tremendous answer to prayer. Maybe you've known what it is for God to use you in a way that you perhaps never thought imaginable. I say this to you this morning, be very wary, because a spiritual high can be extremely draining, spiritually, but also physically, even emotionally. And then after the high, there can be an immediate low. And it will always be when you're on the low that the devil will come and the devil will discourage you. There are many examples of this in Scripture. You think of Jonah. Yes, he had been at a low at the beginning when the Lord had called him. But you think of the wonder, the excitement of having his life spared, being literally thrown up by a fish, and then being miraculously used to institute revival in Nineveh. My Jonah, he knew a tremendous high. Yet what do we read in Jonah chapter 4, verse 3? There he is in prayer, he's despondent, and he says, O Lord, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it is better for me to die than live. He is just known a literal revival. And here's Jonah. What does he say? He said, Lord, take away my life. Lord, it's better that I die and not be alive. Again, you think of Elijah, the man who Elisha followed. He knew what it was to be on a spiritual high for a prolonged period of time. He had lived through 3 years of famine. Then he had slain 450 prophets of Baal. He'd been up and down the Mount Carmel twice, and he travelled 20 miles, and he ran to Jezreel. Just then, Jezebel comes, she sends word, and she sends word to Elijah, I'm going to take away your life. What does Elijah do? He thinks it's a good idea to travel another 90 or 100 miles to the wilderness. And there, physically and emotionally, and undoubtedly spiritually exhausted, again, he asks the Lord to take away his life. While spiritual heights are delightful, they are often draining. Often after a spiritual high, there comes the low. Oh, this morning, be very, very wary. Maybe the Lord's been blessing you of recent times. You've known that guidance of God. You've known wisdom. You've known direction. You've known discernment. You've known the Lord put that divine stamp of approval upon all you're doing for God. Well, be very wary, because the spiritual high is immediately followed by a low. And that's when the devil will come. That's when the devil will tempt you. When did the devil tempt Jesus Christ? Was it the first day that he was in the wilderness? No, it wasn't. It was the 40th day, after 40 days of fasting, when he would have been physically and emotionally exhausted as a human being. Oh, be very, very wary. Be wary that in the high, that then the low comes, and the devil comes, and he attempts to discourage you. Heard about a little boy after a church service who immediately came to his pastor and said, Pastor, when I grow up, I'm going to be a doctor. And I'm going to hopefully earn lots and lots of money. And then I'm going to give it all to your church. Pastor said, well, son, that's very kind of you, very generous. But why are you going to give the church all of your money? And he said, my daddy said to me yesterday, you're the poorest preacher we have ever heard in this church. Oh, there is always those seasons of discouragement after the spiritual high. That's when the devil comes. Be very, very wary. Be very wary. These Jews, they came, they attacked Elisha when he was exhausted. The timing of this attack I want you to notice secondly here the training for this attack. Verse 23, we read, he went up from thence unto Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city, and mocked him, and said unto him, go up, thou bald head, go up, thy bald head. Our King James Version, they call the individuals who verbally attacked Elisha little children. This is an unfortunate translation, because today it gives the impression that these were toddlers. These were little children vocally attacking the man of God. The word, however, in the Hebrew, it often means young men. For example, it was used of Isaac in Genesis 22 when he was at least 20 years of age. The same word was used of Joseph in Genesis 37, again when he was at least 17 years of age. In other words, this word, it has the idea at times of young men in their late teens or early 20s. As Elisha passed them by in Bethel, they jeered at the man of God. Now, what type of city was Bethel? Was it a place where righteousness reigned? Well, it was like that at the beginning. You think of Jacob. There he is, and he has the vision of the ladder up to heaven, the moment of his conversion. Where does he have it? He has it, this vision, in Bethel. It was here in Bethel that Abraham built an altar unto the Lord. The name Bethel, it originally meant house of God or house of prayer. However, in 1 Kings chapter 12, when there was the split between the northern and southern kingdom, Jeroboam, he came and he replaced pure worship with idol worship here in Bethel and also in Dan. So much so that in Hosea 10 verse 5, Bethel actually was known as Bethaven. Bethaven means the house of vanity and iniquity. So here was a place, Bethel. It was originally a place of godliness and righteousness. What's it like now? A house of iniquity. A place of idolatry. A stronghold for Baal worship. And it had been like this for some time. So I want to suggest to you today that these young men, these 42 young youths, they were raised in a society that had degenerated into idolatry and immorality. And so for generations, probably two or three generations by now, they had been raised and they had been taught in the ways of Baal worship. They had been raised against the God of heaven. So they were attacking the man of God. Why? Well, simply because society was like that. Society had really imposed their teachings upon these young men, and so they were just doing what came natural to them. Children are taught by exhortation, but they are also taught by example. You teach children by the example you set. Here were these young men, and they were just following in the footsteps of society. Following probably in the footsteps of their fathers. Raised against Jehovah, and so against Jehovah they were. I want to suggest to you today that how you raise children is extremely important. Yes, you teach them by instruction. You teach them what they are to do, but you also teach them by example. You're teaching the children and youth of today every second of every day. You think even of the congregation here. The children, whether you are their parents, their grandparents, or not related at all, the children are always watching on. They are always learning from your example. I stress especially to parents this morning that if you do not teach your children to love God, then they will probably not love God. You need to do it. You need to teach them, yes, by instruction, but also by the example you set. If you teach them by your example not to love the Lord, not to seek His face in prayer, not to get down before God and pour out your heart before God, then you cannot be one thing and expect your child to be another. These children, they were raised, these young men, raised in a society that didn't love God, and so they were just acting accordingly. Judges 2 speaks of this as well. Verses 10 and 11. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam. What happened? Well, there was a generation. They began to let their heart slip. They began to let their heart hanker after false worship. And within one generation, the next generation, we read there that they knew not the Lord, neither the works which the Lord had done for his people. Yes, children are taught by precept, but they are also taught by practice. Yes, it's what you say, but also what you do. Oh, this morning, remember this. Children are watching on all the time. Think of our meetings on Tuesday night, and especially those who work with them. The children from ungodly homes, from those who do not know and love the Lord, they're watching on. They're learning off you all the time. You're teaching them by your conduct, by your actions, by your love towards them. Oh, you're sending signals to them all the time. Someone has rightly said, children are like wet cement. Whatever falls on them makes an impression. How true that is. Whatever falls on them, it makes an impression on their lives. And here's young men, and they've been raised in a society that hates the God of heaven. And so here they are, and they see the man of God walk past them, and they're just doing what they have been raised to do. The timing of this attack, the training for this attack. I want you to notice thirdly here the truth behind this attack. The truth behind it. Verse 23, he went up from thence to Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, there came forth little children out of the city and mocked him and said unto him, go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. Elisha at this stage, he probably wasn't very old. However, he was already bald. This gang of youths, they were 42 strong. And it seems they were waiting on Elisha. And when he passed them by, they mocked him. They said to him, go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. And when they were mocking his baldness, this was no mere empty jeer or jest. In Old Testament times, baldness was viewed just like calling a man an outcast or a leper. When they said this, they were mocking the man. They were probably mocking his odd dress as well. But I want you to notice that were they merely mocking him because of his appearance? Were they mocking him because of his loss of hair and also probably for his strange dress? Well, whilst they were mocking the man, they were also mocking the message of the man. Notice what they said. Go up, thy bald head. Go up, thy bald head. What are they saying here? What are these young men saying to Elisha in saying, go up, thy bald head? Well, I believe, and commentators agree with me on this, I believe that when they're saying go up, they're actually saying go up to heaven. They're mocking, as it were, Elijah, Elisha's predecessor. Elisha would have made it known that he had viewed Elijah literally being taken up into heaven. And so when they're saying, go up, you thou bald head, go up, they're essentially saying this, why don't you just go to heaven just like Elijah? So what are they doing whilst, yes, they're mocking the man? They're mocking the man in an attempt to mock his message. They were getting at the message by getting at the man. The devil attacks the person of Christ by opposing the people of Christ. He attacks Christ by attacking you. Wonder today, are you suffering? Suffering, maybe individuals, they're pointing at you as an individual. They're making personal remarks, personal jibes, personal jeers at you. Well, remember this, that when they attack you, really what they're doing is they're attacking what you believe. Sometimes people do that. In order to get at your righteous living, in order to get at the fact that you're a testimony around society, they will attack you personally. But when they attack you personally, they are attacking the truth of a living, reigning Christ in your heart by attacking you. We considered this on Wednesday past at our midweek. There were the believers in Acts chapter 8. And there was Saul, not yet saved. What was he doing? He was consenting unto the death of the believers. He was attacking the believers, but really what was he doing? He was attacking the vital truth of a resurrected Jesus Christ reigning in their lives. Again, John 15, verse 19. Christ telling the disciples that he was soon to be crucified. He stated this, "If the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you." Tribulation for Christ is born out of a hatred for the truth of Christ. It is the truth of Christ that Satan hates. You remember that, child of God. Whenever someone comes and attacks you for your faith, remember there, when they attack you personally, really they're attacking the truth that you believe. They're attacking that testimony of a living, reigning, resurrected Christ in your heart and in your life. You know what that teaches you? It teaches me. It teaches us that we're not to take things too personally. Because whenever we're attacked for the sake of the gospel, we're attacked for the sake of Jesus Christ. Really, they're attacking Christ. Whilst they may attack you personally, really they're attacking the person of Jesus Christ. There was the timing, the training, the truth behind this attack. Lastly and quickly, notice the teaching of this attack. Verse 24, he turned back and looked on them, cursed them in the name of the Lord. There came forth two she-bears out of the wood, and tare 42 children of them. These young youths, there were 42 of them. You imagine that. There's one man, Elisha, one man, but 42 young youths. I don't know about you, but I would find that situation quite intimidating. And they're all gathered round Elisha. They're all pointing the finger at Elisha. "Go up, thou bald man. Go up, thou bald man." And they attack him. Was this just a case of boys will be boys? No, it wasn't. Because they were getting at the truth that he believed. So what does Elisha do? And as I said, this was his third miracle. He turns to these young men, he looks at them, and then miraculously, he sets two she-bears, two female bears, on them, and they destroy these young men. They were cursed. They were cursed in the name of God. Was this merely personal vindication? Was this Elisha just getting his own back? Was this Elisha acting out in spite? No, it wasn't. Why did he do this? He did this to teach them a lesson and society the lesson of this, that they were not to defame the name of God. He did this to show them the lesson that God would condemn and curse those who attack his name. He was doing this for the honor and the glory and the majesty of the name of Jehovah. Yes, it seems harsh. Seems harsh on the outward appearance, setting two she-bears on these young men, but that's why he did it. He did it for the honor and the majesty and the glory of God. To show them the truth that whilst God is good, he is also righteous, and he will punish them that defame his name. Whilst God is fair, God is also just. He will reward the righteous and punish the unrighteous. Oh, the Lord's teaching this truth today, that whenever we walk with him and we live for him and we are ultimately one of his and we love Christ, why? Because Christ has loved us, then there will be reward. He will reward the righteous. But the flip side of that is, and the other side of that is this, that whenever we defame Christ and we reject him, we don't take him as our Savior and we don't bow before him, Then there is condemnation. Then there is punishment. Then there is the curse, the wrath of God abiding upon our lives. Romans 11:22. And it sums up this miracle, I think, very, very well. It states this: behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God. Behold the goodness and severity of God. And here's Elisha. There's an attack made upon him. And yet he responds and he condemns these young men. What is he saying? He's saying this: behold the goodness, but also the severity of the God of heaven. An attack upon Elisha. May the Lord bless his word to each of our hearts this morning.